This is September 13th, and that is the song of the Green Mountain Boys. And for any of you in Vermont, and this is especially going out to some of our friends, Emily and her common law movement in Vermont, that's a gift for you folks today, reminding us about how Vermont was the first state to actually take up arms against the British long before Concord and Lexington. They threw out all the crown judges, closed the crown courts, burned up the mortgage deeds, and threw out the New York real estate speculators who were working with the British crown. They were fighting the system long before the American Revolution was ever engaged. They were farmers, ordinary men and women, fighting oppression just like we're doing. And we take our inspiration from them all over the world. The common law movement is growing by leaps and bounds. In the last few weeks alone, we've had literally over now 1,500 new volunteers to sign up for the Common Law Republic, forming local common law assemblies. You know, it's kind of like Charles Dickens' book, The Tale of Two Cities, when he talked about it being the best of times and the worst of times. Because we have all of the problems in front of our face all the time, this global corporate police state that they're attempting to impose on us, although we know that nothing can be imposed on us without our consent. And we are rallying people, awakening them to their real power. Today, I've got with me two frontline workers, two warriors in the struggle. We've got Mike Holt, who is leading the common law court and assembly movement in Australia. And I know a lot of you have questions about the degree of repression and things happening in Australia. So it's great to have Mike with us. And Dina Churchill, who is also leading the common law assembly movement on the east coast of Canada. Now, if you want to follow our work, murderbydecree.com gives you a lot of the historical background. The Republic of Canada website, that's K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofcanada.ca. And on there, you can find posted under media the law that was passed a few days ago on September 8th, which bans and outlaws all COVID measures across Canada. People are using this. I'm getting emails constantly from people saying, I've handed this to the local police, to the medical authorities. We're not going along with it, because anyone who tries to impose distancing or masking or quarantining or vaccines on any of us, especially our children, can face criminal prosecution. We've turned the table. They're committing the crime. Now we have to take the next step and organize. And that's the theme of today. We're going to look at the practical issues of how to set up and maintain common law assemblies in the face of not only tremendous support, but also a lot of pushback that's beginning now. We're going to talk about that. And let me just welcome you both on. First of all, Mike, welcome, brother, and to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you know, it's really great. I'm often on your show, and we're really kind of, I guess the term is cross-fertilizing each other with experiences and that, you know, the practical lessons. It's one thing to talk about common law, which a lot of people do kind of in theory, but your movement and ours in Canada, we're putting boots on the ground. We're actually organizing common law courts. I know you had a mock court trial this last week. I know you want to talk about that and a lot of other things. Let me just ask, is Dina on the air yet? Is she with
us? I'm here.
You are, Dina. Welcome. Dina Churchill, welcome to our show. Do you want to say a little bit about yourself and what you've been doing recently, and then we'll get back to Mike.
Okay, so Dina Churchill. I'm from Halifax, Nova Scotia, and I was a chiropractor for 22 years. My license was suspended because I started speaking about dangers of vaccines, and that set me into, you know, looking for answers within the system and realized the system was quite corrupt, starting from the health department and going through the media. So for 2 years, I've been wrestling with MLAs and MPs and legislative councils in kind of that traditional legal system, and realizing, you know, that it's wearing me down. And so I've just been introduced to you, Kevin, really as a last resort, you know, trying everything else and nothing else worked. And just in the last couple of months, have been introduced to your work. And I guess we've met about a month ago. And since then, it's just been a whirlwind and given me this energy that I haven't had in 2 years. So I thank you for that.
We've been having some good Zoom calls, and just tell folks a little bit about some of the initiatives you're taking in the Atlantic provinces of Canada.
Well, the first Zoom call started, I guess, about 3 weeks ago, and that was with another fellow, Jason Duff, and myself, and Kevin. And we were just going to have a small little kitchen party to talk about setting up an assembly in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And word got out to our friends, and that grew and grew. And soon we had a full living room of people, of 30 people, and there were still people calling, you know, emailing from all over Canada, really wanting to take part in a Zoom call that we were having with Kevin. So Kevin said, open the lines, whatever you can do, we need to get that information out there. So last week, when was that? Seems like a long time ago, Friday, I guess. 9/11. Mm-hmm. We had a meeting with 30 people here in Halifax from what we're calling the Atlantic Common Law Assembly. And there were about 30 and about another 40 or 50 on a Zoom call right after the meeting with Kevin. So it's been just amazing. I mean, the support and the energy and enthusiasm in a group that really has felt quite depressed and downtrodden and, you know, saddened and deflated by the system. It's just given us this new energy to think about the possibilities within within common law. So we have another meeting coming up on this Friday, so a week after we met for the first time, where people are taking, you know, jumping up to the plate and taking responsibilities, you know, looking for positions. We have an event, a big event, that we're hoping to gather a couple of hundred people for on the 26th of September, and that will hopefully draw from all over Atlantic Canada. So it's just been amazing. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Dina. And I'd like you to stay on the air if you could. I'd like a kind of a trialogue between you and me and Mike about, you know, some of the challenges and the experiences of taking this step, which a lot of people haven't even imagined doing yet. But Mike, let me get back to you and tell us first, you know, we hear a lot of stuff in the alternative media about the degree of repression going on in Australia, like these horror stories of people being dragged out of their cars and, you know, for not masking and that kind of thing. Do you want to give us kind of an update on the ground of what it's like and what steps you've been taking to counter that stuff?
Okay, yes. Well, Victoria, of course, has become a rogue state. And the Premier, Dan Andrews, really is just committing high treason. He's authorized these police, and they're not even actually Victorian police. They are United Nations police. They're all, you know, they've been brought in. They're fully armed in horrific-looking uniforms. You know, they're black uniforms with all their padding and their accoutrements. It's pretty scary-looking stuff. And they're dragging innocent women and people off the streets and out of their cars, beating them up, arresting them, and charging them horrendous fines. Ridiculous fines, you know, $6,000 or $7,000 for not wearing a mask. Is this guy serious? He's committing himself to very serious charges under common law. And that's actually what we're working on now. Next weekend, I'm convening a meeting up here. It won't be the first one, but this the last one we did a mock trial and explained what common law is. But the next one, so far we've got about 150 people registered to come along, far more than we expected. So we're going to be convening a or signing the charter to convene a common law assembly, and then I will put a motion to the group that we pass a law like you or a bylaw like you've done, Kevin, to ban all COVID restrictions. We'll also elect as many sheriffs as possible. And what we want to do there is we want to send them out into the community with a copy of the bylaw and just visit companies and you know, businesses and explain to them that these COVID laws have no lawful effect, that they are null and void, that they are not laws, and that they don't have to follow them. And we will ask them to take this copy of the bylaw, put it up in the front of their shop, and stop imposing these COVID laws. Now, I went to a hotel yesterday with my wife for lunch, and there was some young jumped-up girl wearing a yellow vest with COVID marshal on the back, picking up pieces of paper that we have to sign to give our names and addresses. Well, you can imagine what I did. I wrote on mine, show me the Federal Parliamentary Act signed by the Governor-General, and I will sign my giving you authority to take away my rights. If you can't do that, I won't sign. And, you know, that's all you have to do is stand up for your rights.
This is great, Mike. Dina, like, hop in any time if you have any questions or comments, because I know that one of the things that's come up right away, and the content, a lot of the emails we're getting back is people saying, I'd like to do this, but is it legal for me to do it? It's more, I think, a statement of people asking themselves, do I have the courage or am I able to challenge my own assumptions here? Not so much what's going to happen to me. It's such a new idea for people that they can govern themselves and pass their own laws. Any thoughts about that?
Well, I've just recently gone through that myself personally, right, that I didn't know much about common law. So when you're ignorant about something, you know, natural tendency, and I think what's healthy is just to be cautious. But the more I think, and what I've tried to do is I'm learning, you know, as I'm teaching others, is really to start off with the foundation of kind of what common law is and how it works. And that really empowers people. So I think the first step is to know that it works, you know, it worked for Pope Benedict and what it is and how it's a higher court and a higher standard and a higher authority. And then the second part, I think, is owning their own power and realizing that they can do it. But they have to first, I think, see it and see some of the information before they can have that confidence and belief in themselves, really.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I'm finding the same thing here. A lot of Australians still cannot differentiate between the legislative government and common law, and they still think they have to go to the government to get permission to lawfully rebel, but you don't.
Right.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, go ahead, Dina.
We're not taught that anywhere, right? I mean, that this is secret information that, you know, if it gets out, it, you know, can overthrow the government. So it's like a top military secret that no one knows about. So the first time I was introduced to it, I had that thought, you know, is this real? But again, the more I read, you know, the more understanding and the greater confidence and courage that you can see kind of within that system. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
I think it's important for people to understand. Sorry, mate.
Go, Mike. There you go.
Okay. I was just going to say, I think it's important for people to understand what common law is. And common law is the law of the land, the law of the people. And we've always had common law going back, you know, thousands of years. Common law is what the people decide is the law that they want to be governed under and, you know, and how they want to live their lives. So, you know, the Aboriginals here in Australia, for instance, have always had common law. It's their law. So when you understand that, we're not breaking any laws. We're actually bringing in laws that are good for the community.
Right. That's the point. That's the point we have to keep saying to people that, you know, don't worry about this abstract notion of legality. Ask about what's in your best interests. And when people start thinking that way, it starts empowering them. But I was going to say that in both countries, you see, we have this legacy of the British Crown, and it's not like being raised in a place like America where you're told you're a citizen and the government is answerable to you. We're said, no, if you, you know, the British tradition is if you obey this monarch, and the whole idea of one person ruling over others, a sovereign, whether it's a pope or a king or anyone, it's a medieval idea, and we outgrew this idea. But they continually try to impose it because it's a way for a few to rule the many. And when you just say to people, you know, the people are sovereign. Sovereign means we're under our own laws, nobody else's jurisdiction. And people start getting it when you start talking in those terms.
Exactly. Yes.
Let me ask you both, you know, we take these steps, and we've gotten more of this on the West Coast, where there's a whole bigger element here of, more and more apparent Chinese takeover of the resources and even the government. 10 years ago, the head of the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, Richard Fadden, said that the Chinese government had systematically infiltrated and taken over the British Columbia government. And we're seeing the signs of that. And so we find that when we set up assemblies on the coast, they get immediately attacked from within in a very professional operation of divide and conquer and misinformation. So clearly the Canadian government, which is just in bed with the Chinese in grabbing the resources and imposing these measures, they don't want to see this manifesting at all because it's a direct threat to, you know, the big corporate and international interests that are taking over this part of the world. And so one of the things I've been saying to people right away is part of our education programs in the Common Law workshops, we've got to talk about how we defend ourselves, not just psychologically, you know, with our sheriffs and that, but the methods of black operations that are used against us. And, you know, personally, I've had a lot of experience in this. It's why I wrote my whistleblower manual book, to help people with that. But from both of your perspectives, have you had any sign of that yet, and how have you dealt with it?
Sign of resistance within the community?
Yeah, I mean, it starts at the level of rumor mongering, and, you know. Go ahead.
My inbox is full of Kevin and it hate mail.
Oh, yeah, well, that's how it starts. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I've seen that kind of right from the get-go. But I don't know. I think when you're certainly committed, I don't know what other corporate things kind of will come our way. But so far, we've kept our events, you know, in private homes or private space. So I don't know if there's anything we should be on the lookout for. I don't know if you have, Mike, experience in kind of dealing with that in Australia, because this is the brilliant thing about being on the line together. We can share what's working in different countries.
I think you should be very concerned about your security. We are here. We're seeing it already here. Well, you know, I mean, even the other day, yesterday when I posted that video with you and me, Kevin, some guy got on there and started attacking us and making all these silly statements, accusing us of stealing information from other common law websites and using the common law logo. I mean, it was ridiculous, because common law is open to everybody. And I tried to explain that to him, but in the end, yeah, I just decided to delete him. But we've seen people. I know one lady up in Townsville, for instance, went to her local police station and gave them a copy of a document that we now have available on the homepage of our website, commonlawcourtaus.org. That's all one word. And right on the front page, there's a big red button, download a notice of liability. And basically what this does, you fill this out and you take it to your local police and you give them the opportunity to sign it, stating that they will only act under common law instead of using legislative law. Now, this gives them a get out of jail free ticket, because eventually this is all going to come to a head and the people themselves are going to start doing what the American revolutionaries did against the British. They will start boycotting courts and council buildings and government buildings, and nobody will get in or out, and we will probably end up having to drag out judges and magistrates and walking them, making them walk the walk of shame, shouting out their sins, you know. So it may come to that, but this notice of liability is available for everybody to sign, and it gives you a you know, you can say to people, well, I've been acting under common law and I do not approve of what the government is doing to you. So you have to do things like this to protect yourself.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a lot of it's common sense, but and I'm really amazed how quickly memory is wiped out. I mean, we know with something like, you know, the swine flu vaccine years ago, where it was proven the whole thing was a hoax and the big pharma companies even admitted it. Yet a few years later, they do something like this and it's like it never existed. But in terms of myself, after, you know, for people who don't know this, in June of 1998, I helped sponsor the first tribunal into residential school crimes. That same month, a guy called Jerry Peters, who is the head of Black Ops, E Division of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in Vancouver, and he admitted this later, he started a whole program to of undercutting and disrupting everything we were doing. And that eventually stretched right across the country. So for 22 years, these smears have been out there about me, but you notice it hasn't stopped what I've been doing, because in the long run, a smear campaign actually helps you. In the short run, it's designed to get people to pull away from you. But, you know, if they keep talking about somebody, you bring more attention to them. And, you know, people often say, well, how is he still at it? If he's a con man, why would he stay at it through all this abuse 22 years later? You know, it actually brings more light to bear, and they don't want that. They don't want martyrs. They don't want attention on us. They just want people to be frightened of what we're doing and discredit us. And it doesn't really work in the long run. So that's one thing to keep in mind.
Yeah. Well, I've experienced the same thing.
Go ahead, dear.
I think I shared that with you, Kevin, that when I was in chiropractic college, we had a jurisprudence teacher, and he said, you know, media publicity is publicity as long as they spell your name correctly.
Right.
You know, you can use it to your advantage. But in speaking about security, something that's came up is our email and looking at a way that we can communicate as a group, you know, freely. So one of the members had suggested something called Telegram, and somebody else suggested something else that we're going to bring up at our meeting this week. But it would be kind of good to troubleshoot, you know, through that and see what is the best platform that we can use, not only maybe for a social media group, but even just communicating back and forth in email, you know, Proton Mail or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Because I think that, you know, cyber attack is probably more likely what we're going to see, right? I mean, you get that resistance out in the community, but, you know, I think that's a good conversation to have, you know, of different ways or steps that we can, measures that we can take to protect security, you know, of our databases, of our emails, of our communication.
I got just in that regard, you know, it's important. Two basic rules is don't believe rumors, go to the source. So if someone's saying something about Dina, you go and talk to Dina to see if it's true. You know, you don't feed a rumor. And secondly, you think of alternative structures to use. For example, if things get really heated, you can break up into small cells of 3 to 5 people who just go work on their own on different projects, and that way it can't be infiltrated as easily. If you've got a centralized assembly, you know, and this is how the groups in Parksville and Cowichan were taken out in the last few weeks, everything was centralized, and you could get in there and just destroy it from within. Whereas if you've got a lot of little groups working on their own, we have the advantage of a guerrilla movement. They don't know where we're going to strike next. And yeah, we're decentralized and off the radar. And that's a real advantage we should keep in mind.
I often liken ourselves to those whack-a-moles, you know, the ones you bash one down and four more pop up.
I don't know. I kind of like the analogy of a rose bush. You know, you cut off one and three more grow back or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
But you know, on that same thing,
I was just thinking
had...
here. Sorry. I was just thinking here that I was talking about the notice of liability before, and I was actually relating that to this woman up in Townsville, which is in North Queensland, who went to the police station with one of these notices of liability. And a couple of days ago, she got in touch with me and said that a policeman and a health worker turned up to try and assess her mental state. And this is what the communist state always does. When they see that they're getting attacked like they are, they always try and make the people who are attacking them out to be mentally unstable. But they're the ones that are mentally unstable.
Well, here's the thing, Mike. Go ahead, Dina. Yeah, I know you wanted to say something, then I'll mention this.
I don't think I can remember what I was... Oh, I do remember what I was going to say. New Brunswick was our sister province. We just had two people sort of stand up and say we'd like to do start an assembly in New Brunswick just today. So that's
great.
Wonderful. So when you're talking about decentralizing the power, you know, if we have our Atlantic Assembly, but we have, you know, the New Brunswick Assembly and the Newfoundland Assembly and the PEI Assembly, again, we're kind of diversifying our space and, like you said, decentralizing to kind of protect ourselves. So that's going to be a great thing. I'm excited about that.
That's really good. And like Mike said, you light 1,000 brush fires and they can't put them out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kevin, you've been doing this in Canada with all of the common law assemblies, you know, and then when they want to make something like pass a law affecting the whole country, you just unite all the common law assemblies to pass a single law.
That's what we did.
Authorized by everyone.
Yep. That's exactly what we did, because people were saying to us, well, we don't have an assembly. How can these laws be passed? And we said, well, some delegates from the assemblies back east all got together, and they passed this national law. And people can see that, like I mentioned, republicofcanada.ca under media. You can run it off right there as a PDF, share it, use it all over the place. But I wanted to say that, you know, we talked about this whole tactic being used now by doctors when they say they don't give exemptions anymore. And the Ontario College of Physicians and Surgeons just released a statement 2 days ago that said, those people who do not mask may be suffering from a form of paranoia, which would require involuntary psychiatric commitment for 72 hours. Now, There's a law already on the books about that in Canada and England. It's called fixated thread laws. And they started in 2010. They've got five of these centers in London. And it says if you're fixated on an issue or a member of the royal family or any of these other turkeys, you might be suffering from mental illness. So if you show up to a protest more than once, you might be obsessed. And we can bring you in for psychiatric evaluation. So we've got to realize that they're going to use that to scare people. It's primarily to scare. They're not going to lock up, 100,000 of us if we all say no to this. But the point is, it's the psychological warfare, and that's very much what we're in right now.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen the video on YouTube that I posted last year. I had a visit from a couple of policemen one morning, and there was a knock on the door, and I got out there, and I was a bit grumpy that day, and this guy started stammering, the plainclothes cop with a badge on his belt. Well, we're here to see because you posted something on the Facebook. I said, look, mate, I don't give a damn what you want. I said, I've got the right to freedom of speech. Now bugger off. And they did. and this is what you've got to do with them. You've got to catch them unawares and treat them
right.
In such a way that they don't expect, you know? And
right.
They can go the other way. You can treat them nicely, you know? Oh, you're suffering from delusions, you poor fella, sort of thing like that. Yeah. You know, they're trying to use psyops on us. We can use psyops on them.
Well, yeah, exactly. And don't forget, I mean, people, when we're talking about security, the best security we have is our individual resolve to not go along, to not cooperate. Yeah. And you put your heels in, and it's very hard for them to move, even a few people who are doing that.
Yeah. I always tell people, because a lot of people are afraid, you know, and I always tell people, look, don't be afraid. A coward dies 1,000 deaths, but a brave man only dies once, you know. Mm-hmm. Get some backbone. Stand up for your rights.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
And really, what option do we have
go ahead,
this
Dina.
Point, right?
Yeah.
And like
Sorry?
I said, really, what option do we have at this point? We can sit and be killed slowly with injected chemicals, and, you know, chemicals poured into the air and all these crazy mandates and, you know, be slaves, or we can stand up for ourselves and have some courage and confidence in who we are as humans and souls living, you know, on this earth. So I'm with you, Mike. I think, you know, it just, but it just takes a few people, you know, and Kevin, you've been a great inspiration because you're still, you know, alive and well after all you've done, you know, and just, it just boggles my mind to think that the Pope Benedict, you know, with such crime and corruption in the Vatican that, you know, a law can sort of challenge that, you know, after hundreds of years, thousands of years. I think just that one act, it gives, you know, our whole community, our whole humanity kind of confidence in the system. And that's all you need. It's just a spark, right? You just need to know it's possible. And then, you know, it just grows from there.
Yeah, my two inspirations are Kevin and Gandhi. I mean, Gandhi stood up as a single man on a train and said, no, I'm not going to move to a coloured section. I am a man and I'm equal to everybody else. In the end, he gained a whole nation. And, I mean, look at Kevin. He's doing the same thing, basically. He's going to get a whole nation. But more than that, we're going to get a whole world under common law, under the right law,
right.
The man and the woman. So it's
well, somebody compared me to Oliver Cromwell. I like the comparison to Oliver Cromwell rather than Gandhi because I don't like going around in a loincloth, but yeah.
I don't know. You've got nice legs, Kevin.
I don't know. Maybe somebody would like to see me in a loincloth. I don't know. But...
oh,
good. Yes. But it's good. It's good to laugh. You know, one of the areas of the brain they don't control is that governing music and laughter. And I read a really interesting thing once in an anthropology class. It was the theory that human beings learned to sing before they spoke. Because, and I've seen this on when I've done hospital ministry. You go in and old folks who have had strokes, they can't speak, and yet during sing time, they're up there singing away, right? And there's parts of our brain that it's harder for them to control. And you start a meeting, and I think this is a good practical advice for people listening and for all of us, that start your meetings with music, people singing. it really raises the whole energy level and joking around. I remember I went to a residential school healing conference among the Anishinaabe and Lakota people in Western Ontario. And I was the only white guy there. This was like 10, 15 years ago. And they started at, I mean, it was a very gloomy environment because they're all talking about their horrible tortures and pain they suffered at a young age and seeing kids killed and all this. But they started out quite wisely. They began the whole conference with an Aboriginal comedian. He called himself Moccasin Joe. And he was kind of like this, it was like in jokes. Like I they were all laughing at things I didn't understand because they were all reservation jokes, like, you know, roadkill jokes were really popular, different menu for how to cook roadkill. And, you know, but they were making all these inside references. And at the end of that, they were all so much more ready to talk about stuff because they had been laughing at themselves. They'd been just seeing the other side of life. When you look at people walking around on the streets today, they look like concentration camp inmates. They're gloomy. Their heads are down. They look like they're already crushed, which they have been. And we have to raise that energy level. And I know, you know, this is kind of common sense to a lot of people, but we've got to keep that in mind and not get caught up in the gloom that they have defined the issue as. We can define it in another way.
Yes, that's true. What sort of songs do you propose?
Take your pick. Just don't make it country and western too much.
Oh, come on. I'm a country and western singer.
Oh, are you? Okay, well.
Yeah.
Kevin,
I don't know what, you know, what kind of music?
The event
obviously
planned,
bluegrass.
The event that we have planned for the 26th, which is just about an hour outside of Halifax, the organizer, who's a member, has a music festival there every year. So she has Indigenous drummers. She has all sorts of musicians. She has poets. And it's just going to be an amazing celebration, really. You know, she's called it The Gathering, and you're going to be kind of a feature speaker in that. So you're going to be right in the middle of music and song and poetry and literature, and there'll be families there. And again, it kind of dissipates some, like you said, of the anxieties and stresses and brings us back to really what it is, common ground and natural law. So we're sorting out the details right now, but her ideas and what she's developed in corresponding, you know, back and forth, I just think it's going to be an amazing event. So I'm looking forward to it. And I don't know, I kind of like Doris Day for an opening line in the meetings. I don't know. But I do like your idea of music. I think it's amazing. And I use it in my own meditations, but I'd forgotten, you know, at a meeting, it's important. I kind of like humor and kind of throw it in. You know, I think that relaxes me too, to be able to make a joke and laugh. But I love the idea of music.
Well, we have a national anthem.
One of the funny things I heard the other day, one of the assemblies out west, they're going to have a public bonfire of all the tickets that have been issued. So, you know, when they don't mask, you get a ticket. When you know, they're threatening to shut down businesses, take all your tickets and have a big public bonfire, because, hell, the courts aren't open. The government's invalid. They're issuing these deadly laws, not even laws, not even statutes, just decrees. So just put it back in their face. Because, I mean, I doubt if the courts ever open. Even if they do open, there's a huge backlog. The case would probably never come up for years. So just laugh at it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Or you can have a concert, like they do at the concert. When they light the lighters at the concert, you know, and everybody sings, you could just light your ticket and just wave back and forth, singing to the ground.
Let me ask
Some
you about something.
Waving a lot.
Let me ask you about specific campaigns or issues that people keep talking about. I know a big one is we're heading into the fall. Schools are open. I get dozens of emails in a day from, you know, moms especially, who are saying, "I don't know what to do if I keep I can't teach my child properly if I try to homeschool. I don't know how to do it, but I don't want to put them in school." Like, what are some of the campaigns that you think, that, you know, your own groups are focusing on, or ideas that you think are important, right?
Well, at this stage, we're really in the education stage. We're trying to help people understand what common law is, and which is why I'm doing a lot of these videos. I'm also conducting meetings, but you know, all around Australia now. Like yesterday, I was invited into a Zoom chat with some people in South Australia. I believe there were about 100 people at the meeting, and they had a lot of questions about common law because they don't really know a lot about it. So at this stage, we're not concentrating on campaigns so much as educating people so that then they can choose the battles they want to fight.
Well, and in our community, again, like I said, we're just establishing ourselves. We haven't really kind of signed and sat down at a meeting yet. But just personally, what I've been doing, because like you, Kevin, I've been getting the same sort of stories from people in my circle, you know, old patients that I've known for 20 years, and I love them and their kids. And, you know, my heart goes out to them and trying to find solutions that might work. But what I've done is sort of work with one person and educate her, empower her with everything that I have, all the mask safety and the research. And when she had a success in her school, because she wanted the kids to go back to school, because what I said is don't mask, don't shoot them up, don't inject them, and don't, you know, send them no mask, no shots, no school is what my recommendation was, you know, 6 weeks ago, a month ago, 3 weeks ago, even now. But when they have to go back for whatever reason, it was, you know, kind of giving them suggestions. But then when she worked it out that she was able to have her kids go and not mask, then I would ask her if I could use her as a leader in which she helped mentor other people. So now I have a group, an email group, and every time a new mom comes to me, I say, just look, I've got another mom that's going through the same thing. I'm going to connect you. So, you know, empowering them into their groups. So because what worked for one person, then, you know, they can share their advice. And we have lots of no mask groups in Nova Scotia, so I can refer them to a Facebook group where they'll also get support. So that's what I've been doing personally, but we haven't really talked about that as a group or as a directive for an objective within our council or assembly yet.
Well, one thing the Victoria Common Law Assembly did recently is they issued kind of six positions that they think are really important for a steering committee. And this is a practical question. If you don't get a core group organized soon to provide leadership, that tends to fall apart. People want to see results now, not just talk. And those six positions are a chair or a convener, a secretary, which usually includes a treasurer as well, just to keep minutes and membership lists and all that. A sheriff, of course, to organize the defense of one another and eventually the defense of the courts and other things we do. Fourth position is a coordinator of education, both educating within ourselves and in the public. The fifth is the action coordinator. So if you're doing protests, rallies, picnics, you know, as many social events as we can organize to reach out to more people. And finally, the judicial coordinator. That's the person who puts together the legal information, does the research to teach people how you create courts, and eventually to help convene the court, you know, the jury, the prosecution team, the whole bit. And, Tommy, you know, I've run our common law training manual, which you get online at Amazon, although, you know, I urge people not only don't support that corporate system, but try to start using the information, adapt it, because our books sell out really quick. I don't have enough to keep everyone supplied, but you can take the ideas and publish it in your own way. But that's a really good manual to get, establishing the Reign of Natural Liberty, a common law training manual. It lays out all the steps of how to do this stuff. But I really urge people listening to take the step to form a solid core leadership group, and that'll rotate. I mean, you want to get other people involved so no one group dominates it, but, you know, we've got to start that process. It's like having the steam without the piston. You need a way to harness people's energy, and they feel confident that stuff's going to continue to happen.
You're right there, and actually, we've got it enshrined on our website. Your book is invaluable, and we've used a lot of your material in the website. But if you go to our website, commonlawcourtoz.org, there's one there on the main menu, Establish a Court, and the first document is Preparing for a Court, and it's all laid out in there. But what you're talking about there, too, is a common law assembly, and it's basically the same thing. We're learning how to govern ourselves rather than being governed.
Mike,
do you have a set of those principles?
Go ahead, David.
Kevin, do you have those positions? Do you have those positions you could email me so that I can help the
group? Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I didn't quite get. Yeah, I'll get those to you. Go ahead, Dana.
And Mike, I wouldn't mind having that if you could send me Mike's website or the website for their common law assembly, because I'd love to see how you've laid things out and what you've used. And I've read Kevin's book, the Common Law Manual, and I just love the forms and things in the back. So I guess, Kevin, we can just list that right out of the book, you know, and make it available for people.
Yeah.
As long as we know the source.
Yeah, you can actually see Mike's website. It's on republicofcanada.ca. The headline, one of the titles says links. And we're listing fraternal groups, and they're listed right there under links on our site.
Okay, good. Because this is what I'm finding now. Like, we have this surge of energy coming in, and there's lots of new requests and new people, and it's just knowing how to empower them so that the national common law that was passed last September 8th, you know, that's great. This is something I can give mothers and pass out and say, this is, you know, what you taught us in the last seminar, is to really hold them accountable personally, not only the teacher, but the principal, the board of education, and then whoever governs them, the health department, and put them all on notice. So having just that one document, you know, empowers them to feel like they're doing something, and takes them away from feeling the, you know, suppression of the system.
So, well, can I make a suggestion here? Because, you know, people like to go to a website where they can find all of this information in a central repository. Now, we've created one here in Australia. There's one in New Zealand. There's another one in the UK. Set up a Canada website. You can take all the information off our website. You're welcome to share it because it's for common use. And use the same logo even and just put Canada underneath, as we're doing with it. You know, we're putting Australia under the logo. And this way, it creates a unified approach to common law around the world. Now, the other thing that I was talking to Kevin about a couple of times is that we're about to launch today the automated system on the website for registration. So you'll be able to register your birth certificate, you'll be able to register your car, your home, just about anything, even your pets. Now, when you do that, you'll log on, you'll fill in the form, and you'll get an email immediately back saying, thank you, this is the information you submitted. But then you'll get another email a couple of minutes later with a PDF attached to it, and that PDF will be a certificate in that you can then print out and put up on your wall or carry around with you. So you'll have proof that you've registered your car, registered your pet, whatever. So when the council, for instance, comes around and says, well, you've got a dog, you haven't registered it with us, you say, I don't have to register it with you. I've registered it with common law. And the same thing with your car. Funnily enough, last night we had quite a discussion about registering your car. And people were, you know, they don't want to pay these car registrations, but at the same time they want the third-party registration insurance. So we're now looking at issuing common law number plates or registration plates for your car and setting up a common law third-party insurance. We're not only discussing this, we haven't really looked at it yet, but we're looking at it because people want it. And if the people want it, then we should supply it. So a website can be a very handy and strong tool.
You know what this reminds me of? Gandhi's famous salt march to the Indian Ocean. And because the British, this 1931, the British had a monopoly on salt production. Mm. And in a country like India, everyone needs salt. So Gandhi said, well, we'll just break the British monopoly. We're going to walk down to the Indian Ocean, gather salt, and make it ourselves. And, of course, the Brits were standing by to arrest this old guy, right, for gathering salt. But he had like 500,000 people with him, and they went down and started making their own salt. So what are you going to do, arrest 500,000 people? They couldn't. They broke the monopoly, and that's one of the things. Within 6 months, the British were at the bargaining table to start negotiating independence, because you hit them where it hurts, their money and their public image. And you go after that, that's always the two things you got to target, and you've got a huge power.
Well,
yeah,
I
you know, I'd just like to go back to something that you had said, Mike, about the website. I really appreciate that because what I've been doing is, you know, manually entering, all 80 applicants or 80 members that we have, and I don't type very well. So it's been a long process, and I just said it would be great because this is what slows us down is not having easy access. If there's a link I could send someone and say, here's the link, register yourself, and they automatically get information, you know, that has an exponential growth. We can keep up with the growth because I think we're just going to grow exponentially now. I just think it's going to boom. I mean, I think we're really starting to find the tipping point.
Much.
But again, in order to do that, I think we have to have the process and foundation in place to allow that to happen or else we bottleneck and we're going to slow down the growth just by not having the systems in place.
Well, here's the good news. When you get your website set up, we will actually give you this technology free. And we're sharing it with all common law. We're sharing it with all common law groups around the world free.
Oh, thank you. We'll love that.
Yeah. I've already offered it to Kevin, and we're going to be giving it to him and to New Zealand next. But it's in the testing stage right now. We should be able to launch it today. We'll give it a week or so to see how it's all working and shake out any bugs, and then we'll make it available to you. But I suggest you find yourself a member of your group who is a webmaster, set up a website, copy everything off ours, if you like, and then go for it.
Okay.
Mike, you want to give your contact info for Mike, give your email and website again for people who want to contact you about that and look at it themselves.
Yep. The email address, you could use admin@commonlawcourtoz.org. And the website is commonlawcourtaus.org.
Good. Well, that's the thing. I don't copyright anything I do because it's owned. It's public knowledge. It's for the public interest. So no one can claim ownership over it. That's really important.
Well, you know, we're facing a worldwide conspiracy dedicated to destroying a large section of the population of this planet so that they can live in luxury and keep the rest of us in slavery. So we have a moral duty now to create a worldwide government under common law, which is not centralized, but we all work together. And this is really, we're engaged in a war. It's a war, psychological war. It's a political war. It's a military war too, but we don't want to go that route unless we're forced to. But this is why we need to set up a common law assemblies and start appointing sheriffs. That's the first step in protecting ourselves.
And I would say too, it's a spiritual war, however people define
absolutely.
It. It's that three aspects in workshops. I always start by talking about personal, spiritual, and political sovereignty. They're all connected. And it was interesting in the American Revolution, 30 years before it ever began, there was a thing called the Great Awakening in America. And it was this kind of grassroots revival of the sense of, it was taken back into the communities and people were leaving the churches, but reestablishing their own sense of local spirituality and practice, church practice. And it's when the Baptists and the Presbyterians just swept all over the southern states. And the very same people who were involved in that were leading the revolution 20, 30 years later. They say about half the people in the Continental Army had been kind of lay preachers in the Great Awakening movement, right? So the awakening in one area always spills over to the other. You know, our personal reclamation always has a political consequence because it changes the world around us. And that's, we always have to keep all of those in balance, I think, you know?
Yeah, very well put.
And because it's the common law,
we got about 5 minutes left. Go ahead. Sorry, Dina. Start again.
I was just going to say, you know, because it's common law, because it's the law of the land, it's a natural law, it attracts people from different aspects, you know, of our world, people that are wanting to conserve water and not have that taken over as a, you know, big business or, you know, what's happening with the vaccines, forced vaccination or lockdowns and people are away from their families. Like it's going to draw in many different people for many different reasons, but for the same purpose. So
I've noticed this. It's very strange, actually, because, you know, we have the lefties or the socialists, and even they are starting to understand that common law serves them as well. You know? Yeah. So it will embrace every political ideology, I suppose you could say. But it will also embrace every social ideology.
It does. And, you know, it's like religious and political differences are very much designed to divide people and pit us against each other. But in any political or religious movement, there's almost like a totalitarian spirit and a liberating spirit in anything. Either people are going to govern themselves or they're going to be governed, right? And you got to choose where you stand on that. And there's is that line that runs through everything. But I wanted to say we've got about 4 minutes left here. And we're going to end on a really wonderful song called Farewell to the Crown, which comes out of England. I think it's really relevant. Let me just say to both of you, I'd love to have you back on and bring more frontline activists on the show so we can compare notes and give each other support. I just really, if either of you have any final words, now's the time.
I just wanted to thank you, Mike, for offering your services. You know, I really appreciate that, and we'll be in touch. And thank you, Kevin, for liberating us. We're going to see you on the 26th for our big event in Atlantic Canada, and we're looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks, Gina. Okay. Thanks for coming on, and good luck with everything. And, Mike, go ahead.
Well, thank you both for having me on the show, and it's great to see, because often I've wondered what's going on in Canada. So it's good to see that Canada is also out there fighting hard. We don't hear much of it because the MSM, of course, is keeping it all silent, but it's good to know that you're out there, and now we can start exchanging information.
I love it.
Thanks, brother. And we'll, you're an inspiration. You're innovating a whole aspect of this that we haven't even thought about. So it's good to share like this. And that's how we get stronger, by doing this. So thank you both, Mike and Dina. We'll have you back again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I just want to thank all of the people in Australia. It's not just me, Kevin. There's a whole team working with me. Yep. And I'm very proud of them all. Thank you.
Thanks. And that's a good point. We stand on the shoulders of many. We stand on the shoulders of our ancestors. I always remember my great-great-great-grandfather, Philip Annett, from Southern Ontario, who lifted up his musket and took on the British crown in our aborted revolution of 1837. I feel his spirit. I feel the spirit of many genuine patriots who know that the land and the law and the government and spirituality and every aspect of our life belongs in the hands of the people. And we are struggling hard to remove all hierarchy. We don't need rulers over us. We don't need sovereigns or popes or bishops or any of that to govern our lives. We have we the people, and we are the source of all our authority. Please keep that in mind over the months and years to come. That's our guiding spirit and principle. And again, final information, you can get the law banishing COVID measures across Canada. You can see that at republicofcanada.ca under media. You'll see the media release of September 8th, and then a PDF button at the bottom. You can print it, run off the document. There's also leaflets on that same website under leaflets that you can use to educate people in your community. And most importantly, write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com, to find out how to organize common law assemblies in your area. Also, under the instigation of the Council of Assemblies at protonmail.com. They're the parallel movement working to unite common law assemblies across Canada. Council of Assemblies at protonmail.com. They'll send you out all the material you need. You can personally write to me, angelfire101@protonmail.com. And especially follow our links. If you go to murderbydecree.com, you'll see all of the links to my books and the whole history of this long movement. So I want to thank you all for tuning in today. Take the lessons you've learned, apply them. The initiative lies with you. Don't wait, act now. That's where our power lies. And again, we're ending on the show with one of our favorite songs, Farewell to the Crown. We'll be back next week, same time, same frequency here at BBS Radio. Here we stand. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. I thank you. Stay strong.
May I just say one more thing, Kevin, very quickly. You'll find that document, Common Law Public Safety Bylaw, in Word and PDF format on this commonlawcourtaus.org website under downloads. Thank you very much, Mike.
Goodbye. Appreciate it. We'll be back next week. Stay strong. Stay clear, everyone. Bye for now.